Hello and welcome to a special edition of Face to Face. I'm Kavit Ahvayi. I, along with Press TV Newsroom Director Hamid Reza Emadi, for the next 30 minutes will be interviewing Iran's new foreign minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, his first interview with an international news outlet. In this interview, we will discuss Syria, Iran's talks with the P5 Plus One, and a range of other issues of regional and global importance. Well, as mentioned in our prelude there, Mr. Mohammad Javad Zarif is in the studios, and we'd like to first welcome him. Thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us. I'm sure you have a very busy schedule. And talk about a busy schedule. You weren't in your office for 36 days. I counted the number of days, and you had to meet with a major challenge, and that was this possible U.S.-led military strike on Syria. It appeared that the U.S., which is on hold right now, was in a rush to go into this war or this military intervention. Why do you think that was?
Let me first thank you for giving me this opportunity. I think a number of groups and people inside the United States and some interest outside the United States wanted to put the president of the U.S., whom I believe was reluctant to start a war, into a trap. A trap which he had unfortunately laid down for himself. And that was to get him involved in a war in order to address a hypothetical issue of the use of chemical weapons by the government of Syria. I say a hypothetical issue because there was and still is no proof that the use of chemical weapons was perpetrated by the government. Let me say that Iran, as a victim of chemical weapons, condemns any use of chemical weapons, regardless of the victims or culprits. But we believe that nobody has the right to take the law into their own hands. That is, the United States does not have any legal claim to act at the same time as the prosecutor, judge, and unfortunately the executioner in dealing with these issues, particularly in light of U.S.'s own record of supporting a regime, that of Saddam Hussein, that used chemical weapons not only against Iranian soldiers and civilians, but against his own people in Halabja. And these are not just allegations, but proven time and again by the United Nations teams of investigation. Now, we have a UN team that visited Syria. And that team has not produced a report yet. And if it does, it didn't have the mandate, unfortunately, to determine responsibility. And the situation is far from clear. Now, let us hope that with the new arrangements, we will start the process of moving chemical weapons out of this region in its totality. We believe that our region has enough difficulty, is in enough turmoil, not to be engulfed in a war in which chemical weapons and other weapons of mass destruction are used. And that is why Iran has been pushing for a region free from weapons of mass destruction in the Middle East. Now, let me make one more point. The use of chemical weapons is a crime. We believe it's a crime against humanity. But we believe also that the use of force, the threat of use of force, is also a criminal offense in international law. Unfortunately, it seems to me that the United States seems to be living in the 19th century when the use of force was a prerogative of states. It is not. I believe the United States, the President of the United States, who seems to be a very fine constitutional lawyer, has to look into his law books, his international law books, which he hasn't reviewed, I think, recently, and consider the fact that when he concedes, as he did last night before the American people, that there is no imminent or direct threat against the United States, then the United States does not have any standing under any provision of international law to take law in its own hands.
So, Dr. Zarif, if Syria didn't pose an imminent threat to the United States security, Why is it that we've heard so much talk of attacking Syria and launching a war against the country?
Well, it seems to me, as I said in the beginning, that the president of the U.S. is being pushed into a trap that is being played by certain interests inside the U.S. who seek their interest in hostility and tension, and also some interests outside the United States, unfortunately in our region, who have tried in the past 2 years to change the military balance in Syria. First of all, to get the Syrian people involved in a civil war, not of their own making, because those who are fighting inside Syria are mostly extremists and takfiris who have come from outside. They are not...
Do we know who's supporting those people? Who's funding them? Who's arming them in Syria?
We all have seen the evidence of those who have been pushing for a war in our region. Unfortunately, this is due to a very short-sighted view of their own interest, because a war in our region can be at least perceived in the beginning when they started as a limited surgical operation. But once you unleash force, there is no way that you can contain it. And I think the United States knows it. The United States tried shock and awe. If you remember Rumsfeld and the terminology he used when he when the United States wanted to invade Iraq, he wanted to use a shock and awe operation so that it would be done with in a matter of days. Now, how many years, 11 years, 10 years later, we still have a situation where only during the month of Ramadan, I was told during this recent visit that I had to Iraq, that only in Ramadan 1,000 people were killed in Iraq in roadside bombings. There is a need for the United States to come to the realization, and I believe this is an important realization for the United States, that not only the use of force is illegal, that not only the threat of force is against a peremptory norm of international law, but also, and more importantly, the use of force is ineffective. Force has lost its utility in international relations, and it lost its utility a long time ago. In 1928, civilized countries decided to reject the use of force as an instrument of national policy. Before then, force, war, was an instrument of national policy. They thought that war was diplomacy by another means. But since then, the international community has come to its senses, believing that the use of force does not provide the necessary outcome that those who started wanted to provide and wanted to produce. And that is why they have outlawed the use of force. It's not a bunch of idealistic lawyers who sat down and banned the use of force, but in fact, because of the reality that it has lost its utility. Let me just tell you that in the 20th century, 85% of the cases where a country resorted to force have resulted in that country either being annihilated or not achieving the intended consequences of the war. So that shows to you empirically that force is no longer effective. I hope that the United States, which is the mightiest country on the face of the earth, would come to this realization that it is important to use other means of influence. Force is no longer effective.
Well, that brings me to the question of which the United States has time and again said, and I think you made a remark on that when you were recently in Iraq, about all options being on the table. But before you elaborate on that, there's been a lot of positive reaction coming from the U.S. based on your nomination. I'm going to read some headlines. This is someone who knows the United States very well, and with all the frustrations of the past, is still someone they know in Washington. You're known to have a contact book, as some are calling it, which includes Vice President Joe Biden, Chuck Hagel, the Defense Secretary. Do you think with these people that you knew from the past who are now in the positions that they are, that it's going to give you an edge in terms of pursuing any type of relationship with the United States, if that's on your agenda?
Well, on your first question, I believe the statement, all options are on the table, is an outdated statement, because all options are not on the table, at least for countries that claim to be law-abiding, for countries that claim to be following the UN Charter, for countries who push others to live to their international obligations under the UN Charter, push others who want to punish others for violating international law. They have to know that all options are not on the table. Threat or use of force have been removed from the table long time ago by countries, including the United States, when they gathered in San Francisco and decided to save the succeeding generations from the scourge of war, which twice in their generations have caused untold misery. So this comes from the Charter of the United Nations adopted under U.S. hospitality in San Francisco in 1945. So they have to understand that all options are not on the table. On the second issue, I had encounters with a number of members of the current administration in their previous capacities as members of U.S. Congress and in my previous capacity as Iranian ambassador to the UN. I believe they know where I'm coming from and I know where they come from. And that is why I believe they are reluctantly being pushed into a war that they don't want, they do not need. And I believe the international community has to help them in order to avoid this catastrophe, which will burn the entire region and will burn the United States with it.
From what you said, Mr. Foreign Minister, I realize that we are thinking about the U.S. being dragged into the war, technically speaking, by other forces in the region or beyond this region. Can you elaborate on that? Is the United States really going to launch a military strike on Syria at the end of the day? Or you think the U.S., maybe the U.S. is not willing to do so, but there is a huge pressure on the United States to go to the war in Syria?
I hope that reason will prevail. I hope with the Russian proposal and the opportunity that has been created by the acceptance by Syria of the Russian proposal, others will stop creating excuses to push for a war, to beat the drums of war. They should understand that this is dangerous for themselves, for the region. We've seen from the comments that we hear from some countries in the region and some countries outside the region, that a lot of people are unhappy, and this is regrettable to say, that some countries are unhappy that we are avoiding a war. I do not know by what, what extension of logic can in fact be used by our friends in the region, who are unhappy with the fact that a diplomatic avenue is being sought and hopefully found in order to avoid a major catastrophe on their doorsteps. A major catastrophe that will lead to extremism, will lead to sectarian divide, will lead to further conflict in our region just for a short-sighted interest to change the balance of forces inside Syria through more bloodshed, more killing of innocent people. We all need to sit down and push all Syrian factors, encourage all Syrian factors, including the Syrian government and those who are really interested in the future of Syria, to the negotiating table in order to find a peaceful solution. Syrian crisis does not have a military solution. That has to be understood by all.
Does Iran have a practical plan at this point in time?
We believe that we should put an end to the fighting in Syria. All sides should sit and find a peaceful solution based on democratic principles, based on participation of all segments of Syrian society in the governance of their country without foreign interference. I believe that could be done. Unfortunately, a great deal of foreign intervention, a great deal of arms shipment to various rebel groups, extremist groups, groups that have caused havoc in the region and beyond the region, is continuing for very short-sighted interests. They should know that those who helped create and breed extremism in the region fell victim to that extremism, whether that extremism was that of Al-Qaeda, whether it was that of Taliban, or that of Saddam Hussein. Those who sponsored them were their final victims.